to train the next generation of artificial intelligence, you don't just need, 100,000 GPUs.
Right. You need to actually move 100 million cubic yards of Texas rock.
Exactly. Welcome to the deep dive. For our listeners managing institutional capital, the AI conversation has, it's heavily skewed toward the ethereal, right? Mm-hmm. Large language models, parameter counts, semiconductor design.
Yeah, the software side.
Yeah, but the staggering reality of this technological leap is fundamentally physical. You simply do not get the cloud without moving literal mountains of dirt.
I mean, it is arguably the most intensive, heavy civil engineering undertaking of our generation. The digital world it's entirely tethered to physical constraints.
Which is really our mission for you today. We are unpacking the macro environment of data center infrastructure. And specifically, we're looking at how one company, Sterling Infrastructure ticker STRL, successfully transformed its entire business model to become a primary beneficiary of this secular megatrend. Mm-hmm. We are synthesizing a massive stack of equity research here. We've got notes from William Blair, Stiefel, D.A. Davidson, and Sidoti, alongside some highly detailed AlphaSense expert transcripts and recent earnings calls. So this is designed to give you a really comprehensive look at the e-infrastructure economic moat.
And setting that macro stage requires looking at the sheer velocity of the capital being deployed. I mean, the major hyperscalers, Meta, Microsoft, Google, Amazon, they posted this massive 61% growth in capital expenditures in 2025.
Wow.
Right. But looking ahead to 2026, the outlook remains just incredibly robust. Hmm. We're tracking total hyperscaler CapEx potentially hitting that $600 to $700 billion range globally.
Okay, let's unpack this, because what stands out in the Stiefel and D.A. Davidson notes is how that capital is physically manifesting. It's hyper-concentrated.
Yeah, very concentrated.
Like, Meta recently upgraded its plans to an astounding $10 billion investment for a single campus in El Paso, Texas. That is a massive leap from historical data center spending.
Oh, absolutely.
But the metric that genuinely demands attention here isn't just the dollar amount, it's the physical footprint. In 2018, a standard data center campus sat on roughly, 50 acres?
Yeah, 50, maybe 60 acres.
Right. And today, these mega campuses have exploded to over 1,000 acres. It's like we went from building standalone big box retail stores to constructing entire sovereign city states.
That's a great way to put it.
So why the sudden massive jump to 1,000 plus acres? Is this purely a function of needing that much square footage for server racks, or is there some secondary physical constraint driving this land grab?
What's fascinating here is that the server space itself is actually a tiny fraction of that footprint.
Wait, really?
Yeah. The explosion to 1,000 plus acres is fundamentally driven by power generation and utility macro infrastructure. When you transition from a standard cloud data center to an AI training cluster, the power density per rack just goes parabolic.
Right, because of the GPU requirements.
Exactly. Yeah. You're no longer building a facility. You're building a dedicated industrial ecosystem.
Yeah.
That 1,000 acres is required for dedicated substations, massive water cooling facilities, thermal management systems, and these incredibly intricate underground utility networks.
So they secure 1,000 acres just to fit the utilities, but, I mean, land is totally useless without power. And looking at the AlphaSense transcripts with industry project managers, plugging a 1,000-acre campus into the regional grid isn't just difficult right now. It seems mathematically and logistically impossible.
It basically is. The grid constraint is the absolute bottleneck of the AI revolution. We are currently in the midst of a severe time-to-power crisis.
Yeah, the lead times are just wild.
They are. The lead times for permitting, utility negotiations, physical grid connection, they're stretching anywhere from 24 to 72 months.
So 2 to 6 years.
Right. 2 to 6 years before a newly built project can actually draw the operational power it needs from the public grid.
2 to 6 years is an absolute eternity in tech. I mean, the entire semiconductor life cycle turns over twice in that span. If hyperscalers cannot afford to wait 72 months, how are they bypassing the utility grid to get these things online?
Well, they're shifting aggressively toward behind-the-meter, self-contained power generation.
Okay.
We are seeing facility designs that integrate massive on-site natural gas plants, utility-scale battery storage, and, as we've seen in recent Texas filings, active developmental plans for modular mini-nuclear reactors right on the campus.
Wow! Mini-nukes on site.
Yeah.
Which fundamentally changes the engineering profile of the site, right?
Drastically. Mm. Bringing power generation on site means you have to construct a self-sustaining utility grid from scratch.
So
this requires incredibly intricate underground duct banks, heavy electrical conduit, and robust water infrastructure long before you even pour the foundation for the servo halls.
Let's drill down into that for a second, because terms like underground duct banks get thrown around in these research notes as if they're just, you know, basic plumbing.
Right, like laying down some PVC.
Exactly. What does that actually entail from an engineering perspective?
So a duct bank in an AI data center isn't just a pipe in the mud. We're talking about massive, thermally regulated concrete encasements. They are designed to carry miles of high-voltage transmission cables.
Okay.
And because of the sheer amperage required by AI compute clusters, those cables generate immense heat. If they aren't encased in specialized thermally conductive concrete at specific depths and spacing, the cables will literally melt under the load.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Building these requires precision excavation, highly specialized materials, and zero margin for error.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting, because I have to push back on the financial mechanics here.
Sure.
If power is the ultimate bottleneck, and projects are facing these 24 to 72-month grid delays, or they're waiting for complex on-site generation to be approved, wouldn't that severely stall the cash flow for the construction companies?
You would think so, yeah.
Right. Because if a project is stalled out in month 18 waiting for a substation or a natural gas permit, how is a site developer like Sterling?
That is the crucial paradox of this entire cycle. The delays in final power delivery do not halt the civil engineering work. They actually compound its scale and its margin.
Really? How so?
Because construction on-site preparation routinely begins within 30 days of the land transaction clearing. That's well before the 72-month power situation is fully resolved. They begin moving earth immediately.
Wait, they just start digging while the energy lawyers and electrical engineers are still arguing over the eventual power source?
They have to, because the civil works take years. Furthermore, building behind-the-meter power actually increases the scope, margin, and duration of the site work for companies like Sterling. The sheer desperation for land has changed the topography of the work, too.
How do you mean?
Well, one expert in the OfficeIn's transcripts noted a fascinating dynamic. Early in the data center boom, developers snatched up all the nice, flat, easy-to-grade land near existing metropolitan grids.
Right, the easy stuff.
Exactly. A site prep contract for those flat sites might have been, say, $25 million. Now, because they need 1,000 acres and massive behind-the-meter infrastructure, they are forced into harsh, rocky, uneven terrain far outside the urban core.
Which requires a completely different scale of excavation.
You are no longer leveling a farm field. You're moving up to 100 million cubic yards of solid rock. You're blasting, crushing, and repurposing mountains of material right on site.
So that turns a quick earth-moving job into a multi-year phase?
Exactly. It turns a standard $25 million site prep job into a 100 million-plus mega project per campus. The delay in getting grid power forces hyperscalers into remote, difficult terrain, which mandates vastly more complex and lucrative site preparation.
Okay, so let's map this macro reality onto our specific focus today, which is Sterling Infrastructure. Because over the past decade, they've pulled off a radical corporate transformation to capture this exact dynamic.
They really have.
Back in 2016, 79% of Sterling's revenue was low-margin, fixed-price, heavy highway work, you know, paving roads for the lowest public bidder.
All right.
But by 2025, that fixed-price highway work dropped to just 9% of their business.
They effectively engineered a masterclass in balance sheet de-risking. They systematically pivoted away from that race-to-the-bottom public bidding, which, by the way, is notoriously vulnerable to raw material inflation.
Absolutely.
And they focused heavily on their e-infrastructure segment. Today, e-infrastructure generates roughly 70% of their operating profit, and 84% of that segment's backlog is mission-critical work.
And the margins are staggering for the construction sector. We are looking at adjusted operating margins projected in the 23 to 24% range for this e-infrastructure segment.
Which is phenomenal.
It is. But I have to play devil's advocate here for our institutional listeners. Moving dirt sounds like a highly commoditized, low barrier to entry business. You lease a fleet of excavators, you hire a regional crew, and you dig a hole. Why on earth would a tech giant pay a mid 20% margin premium to Sterling instead of just hiring the cheapest local firm?
If we connect it to the bigger picture, it's because hyperscaler demand is fundamentally capacity constrained, not price constrained. The financial modeling for these clients prioritizes speed and absolute reliability above any construction line item cost.
Okay, that makes sense.
Consider the schedule snowball effect. Let's say a local, low-bid developer is just 2 weeks late preparing a massive building pad on a $3 billion five-year mega campus.
That delay compounds across the entire critical path, doesn't it?
Vastly. Subsequent specialized trades get backed up. Hundreds of millions of dollars of sensitive electrical equipment sit idle in staging areas, accumulating carrying costs.
Right.
Suddenly, that two-week delay at the foundation level cascades into a multi-million dollar overrun and pushes the operational launch date out by an entire quarter. And in the AI compute arms race, missing a deployment window by a quarter could mean ceding generational market share to a rival.
So they are effectively buying insurance. They pay Sterling's premium for the certainty of execution.
Certainty of execution and sheer operational scale. You cannot execute a 1,000-acre site prep with leased regional equipment. You need an armada. Sterling owns one of the largest yellow iron fleets in the United States. That massive capital outlay for heavy equipment functions as a powerful barrier to entry. Furthermore, large technology companies have draconian safety requirements.
Right, the liability is huge.
Exactly. If a worker gets hurt on an excavation site, the entire megacampus shuts down for an investigation. Sterling's impeccable safety record and institutional-grade fleet weed out 90% of the smaller competitors before the bidding even begins.
So they've completely dominated the dirt and the civil engineering. But looking at their capital allocation, they didn't stop there. They looked at the second biggest bottleneck for these hyperscalers and decided to literally buy the solution.
Yes, the CEC acquisition.
Exactly. In the third quarter of 2025, Sterling acquired CEC Facilities Group, a Texas-based specialty electrical and mechanical contractor, for $505 million.
Which was executed at roughly 10 times EBITDA. And in the context of specialized mission-critical contracting, that multiple is highly attractive.
For sure.
CEC's business mix is perfectly aligned with Sterling's strategic vision, too. Over 80% of their revenue is mission-critical, heavily weighted toward advanced semiconductor fabs and data center electrical infrastructure.
Let's look at the strategic leverage of that acquisition, because a 10x EBITDA multiple is only accretive if it fundamentally changes the operational velocity of the combined entity. It seems to me they are attacking the critical path. It's like being the general contractor who doesn't just pour the foundation, but also perfectly wires the nervous system of the building simultaneously, instead of making the client wait for a second crew to arrive 2 months later.
Exactly. By combining site development with underground electrical work, they can run these processes in parallel rather than in series. That parallel processing is the exact operational synergy driving the value here.
Because traditionally it's very sequential.
Very. Traditionally, site development, the grading, the dry utilities, the massive concrete duct banks is executed in series. The civil contractor digs the trenches, finishes their scope, demobilizes their massive fleet, and only then does the electrical contractor mobilize to lay the underground cables.
Which introduces massive friction. You've got two separate contracting teams, two separate mobilization phases, and, you know, inevitable finger pointing if the trenching doesn't perfectly match the electrical schematics.
Oh, there's always finger pointing. But by combining the heavy civil development with the complex underground electrical work under a single corporate roof, Sterling eliminates that friction. Sterling's CEO explicitly noted in a recent transcript that they are now getting dry utilities poured, cured, and finished before the client has even finalized the selection for the above-ground building electrician.
That's incredible.
This vertical integration compresses the overall project schedule by 1 to 2 full months.
And going back to our previous point, if time to market is the absolute most valuable currency for a hyperscaler, a contractor who can guarantee a 2-month schedule compression possesses immense pricing power.
It creates a singular point of accountability, which de-risks the project for the institutional client. And from a revenue synergy perspective, CEC brings incredibly deep entrenched relationships with major semiconductor manufacturers. We were talking about active contracts with Intel, Samsung, and Texas Instruments.
Which opens a massive cross-selling pipeline. Sterling can immediately pitch its legacy heavy civil site development services into CEC's massive semiconductor client base while, you know, pushing CEC's highly specialized electrical services into Sterling's dominant hyperscaler network.
Yeah, exactly. And this cross-pollination into semiconductors is vital because it exposes Sterling to a much broader macro tailwind. The total addressable market we are analyzing expands far beyond just AI data centers. We are witnessing a federally catalyzed American industrial renaissance.
The pipeline data tracking this capital formation is just staggering. If you look at the Stifel Data Center Project Tracker, the broader U.S. pre-construction data center pipeline is up roughly 170% year over year.
Yeah.
But when you isolate Texas, the pipeline is up an astonishing 865%. The velocity of development in the Sun Belt is unprecedented.
This is being driven by structural, long-term federal policies. The GPS and Science Act is injecting $50 billion into semiconductor manufacturing, running parallel to the manufacturing incentives within the Inflation Reduction Act.
Yeah.
These policies are forcing a massive wave of industrial onshoring. We are seeing groundbreakings for sprawling EV battery plants, advanced pharmaceutical manufacturing facilities, food processing plants, and multi-billion dollar semiconductor fabrication plants.
And Sterling is aggressively expanding their geographic footprint to capture this, right? They are leveraging the CEC footprint, which is deeply rooted in Texas, to win complex projects like the Meta El Paso mega campus. They are effectively attacking the booming Texas market from multiple angles while actively laying the groundwork for expansion into the Pacific Northwest.
Mm-hmm. They're deploying their balance sheet to follow the mega campuses wherever the power grid allows them to be built.
So what does this all mean? For an institutional investor, it sounds like Sterling's physical assets are basically a call option on American industrial reshoring. If AI spending takes a breather, they don't have to reinvent the wheel. The literal excavators and heavy engineering crews used to grade an AI data center are completely agnostic to the macro tech environment.
That's exactly it. The concept here is asset fungibility, and it's the cornerstone of their downside mitigation.
Right.
The CEO summarized it perfectly on a recent earnings call, noting that the physical ground prep, the blasting, the grading, the depth trenching, is virtually identical whether you are building a hyperscale cloud facility or an advanced EV battery plant.
That makes total sense.
The equipment, the engineering talent, and the project management expertise transition seamlessly across these multi-billion dollar verticals. If technology capital expenditures take a brief pause in, say, 2028, but heavy automotive manufacturing accelerates, Sterling doesn't miss a single beat. They simply redirect their capacity across the street to the active mega projects.
It really is a remarkable case study in strategic corporate evolution. The macro tailwinds of the AI data center boom, the severe time-to-power grid crisis, and the generational wave of American industrial reshoring have all converged perfectly.
They have.
Sterling didn't just stumble into this position. They executed a deliberate, multi-year pivot away from low-bid, vulnerable, heavy civil highway, contracting to construct an elite, high-margin e-infrastructure platform.
Which leaves us with a critical, forward-looking dynamic to consider.
Okay, let's hear it.
Right now, the market is entirely focused on the golden age of the initial capital expenditure build phase. We are watching the construction of these 1,000-acre mega campuses from the ground up. But once these facilities are operational, they will function as highly complex, self-contained, sovereign utility grids.
Right.
This raises an important question. What does the recurring revenue model look like for the maintenance, emergency upgrades, and long-term lifecycle management of the highly specialized underground utility and electrical infrastructure of these sites? The initial build is immensely profitable, but could e-infrastructure maintenance become the next massive, high-margin recurring frontier for this sector?
That is a phenomenal layer to factor into long-term valuation models. The dirt isn't just moved once. The infrastructure requires permanent stewardship. The next time you analyze a cloud software multiple, remember the millions of tons of earth moved to make it possible. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep looking beneath the surface of the market's biggest trends, and we'll see you next time.